Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Friday, the 20th of February. And it's very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel and then I'll let you know how you can get in on the conversation. And then we'll actually have a conversation that you can get in on. That's our plan for today. Simple as that. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning, good morning. And SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is here.
Yay. So happy to be out in this warm, welcoming environment.
Rosemary came in this morning and said, we need a new word.
For cold doesn't do it.
Cold does not do what this is. And Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is on his way. He is in traffic on the Thruway. There is an accident, and he is caught in that, but is close. So we'll be here in a little bit. So we will start without him, and then we will welcome him when he arrives in a few minutes. So let us, again, a reminder, you can join us, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can comment on our webpage at WAMC.org/roundtable. Today's post is 2/2015. And just click on that and you can comment and we would love to hear from you. But again, roundtable at WAMC.org to connect with us directly. We would love to hear from you this morning. All right, we've got a lot going on and a lot to talk about, so let's get right to it. And we'll begin with, this comes out of the ISIS conversation that we had on yesterday's show about the president. And so yesterday there was the call by the president for expansion of human rights to combat extremism on terror, gentle hand or iron fist. Obama calls for expansion of human rights to combat extremism. This was the meeting yesterday of foreign leaders gathered at the State Department as part of a three-day conference on countering violent extremism. As he sought to rally the world behind a renewed attack on terrorism, the president argued on Thursday that force of arms was not enough and called on all nations to put an end to the cycle of hate by expanding human rights, religious tolerance, and peaceful dialogue. Easier said than done?
Dead time. Do you want,
Rosemary?
I guess I'll jump in. Oh, sorry. Okay. I think that the New York Times nailed this whole situation. It's a wonderful idea. It's a wonderful sentiment. I'm annoyed at all the Republicans who are saying he just wants to fight terrorism by offering jobs. That's just so reducing what he actually said to ridiculousness that it's not worth commenting on. However, the job for him is convincing the very people he was talking to, some of our allies in the fight against terrorism, are themselves hell holes of as far as human rights are concerned. So how do we convince them that we have to make things better in the Middle East when they themselves are problems?
Alan.
Very good point. That's a very good point. I mean, you know, no matter how we try, we can't get over the way in which the Saudis behave, and we can't get over so many of these other sort of corrupt regimes which we have supported in the past. And that, Rosemary, I think your point is well taken, becomes fodder for the ISIS people in terms of making an argument that we are basically a colonial occupying power. That's very tough to get around.
Yep.
Now, we in this country don't like to hear that, but in fact, they're not interested in what we think. They're interested in what the people that they're trying to get a hold of are.
Exactly. And they do enjoy it in the Middle East and North Korea and Russia when we have situations like Ferguson and Staten Island where police are beating down minorities, because that's human rights. We do it too. We have our own problems. And then we have a president who gets up and is lecturing about how we need a better situation. Some of the countries that were at this conference with the president were included Uganda, which jails and kills gay people. Saudi Arabia, which flogs bloggers who advocate freedom of press and discussion, Kazakhstan, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar. These are not places where human rights is big on the agenda. And we're saying, hey, we have to worry about this around the world to fight extremism.
So how should we play? I'm sorry.
No.
So how should we play it? Then the question is, what do we do? I mean, we've been doing what you're just suggesting all along. Do we cut the legs out from under the Saudis, for example?
Oof. I think our whole Saudi policy and our whole, we keep saying this and skirting it, our whole Israeli policy needs another review. We have not been, we do not have an organized, united policy. We've not looked at what we want to get and how we can gain it. So I don't think it's a quick fix. But I do want to go back to Republicans who have dismissed this conference. They just say it's a feel-good exercise. The president should be taking a hard stand, stepping up his military campaign, and this conference maybe is 6 years too late. Why do it now when we're in the midst of a real combat situation? So I don't know why it's either or. It should be both.
Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, said on CNN yesterday, as vicious as the Islamic State has been toward Jews and Christians, killing them, cutting off their heads, burning them alive, they are just as vicious to most Muslims in Iraq and Syria who are struggling under their yoke right now. The reason they are doing it is because they have more arms and weapons and more soldiers and no one is standing up to them. That's what this president needs to do.
ISIS is, I think one of the foreign ministers, the guy from Jordan, said this. Right. It's a rallying point for the disaffected. So that's true. It has a message of hatred and revenge that seems to be resonating among people who don't have a whole lot of other hope or whose pride is injured. So it isn't just the poor, and I know better than that, but it's people who see a brighter future with ISIS than with the West. Well, how did we lose this moral authority that our way of life and our philosophy was exceptional, we used to think. And the president's taking criticisms because he's asking these kinds of questions. Are we really exceptional? Maybe we're just like everybody else. And that's anathema to them.
Anything else, Alan?
No, I think that's a real dilemma. I mean, it's a dilemma for us. We don't know what to do. I do know that there's sort of middle range politics that the president has to contend with. People are saying he's not doing enough. He calls a conference. They say, okay, but that's not enough.
Right.
You can't do that. You can't talk your way out of this. So there was a point in this country when international relations really was one of those areas that people cooperated on. There is no corner that the Republicans are going to allow that to happen.
Right.
And that is something that people do understand and they don't like. And you see it showing up in the polls again and again and again. These sort of cheap stomach-punching shots are hardly the stuff of getting the American people behind you, even though that's what they think.
Okay, and here's one other point, too. We're worried right now because there's a crisis in the Middle East. But we have this same lack of a cohesive policy and a way to carry it out right on our own borders in Latin America. We are evil to people who we perceive as our enemies, Cuba and Venezuela, and yet we're doing very little to improve the quality of life, to improve hope and education, and the things that keep people happy in their own countries and in good relations with us.
We're going to take a break. We will come back. Mike Spain is here. He has arrived safely, we are pleased to say. So we'll let him take his coat off and get settled. And we'll be back and continue our conversation after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Emma Willard, an all-girl boarding school working to help students discover their own voices. EmmaWillard.org. DeMarchand, Hudson, New York. Featuring winter fashions, shoes, and accessories for men and women from U.S., European, and local designers. Open every day except Wednesday. We want to dress your body. DEMARCHIN.com. And Equimotion, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Working to improve communication and performance between horses and their riders through equine massage education, winter and spring clinics for all ages and levels. EquimotionEDU.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo, and Times Union associate editor Mike Spain, after a grueling commute, has arrived. Good morning, sir.
I'm here to give the traffic report for WAMC. Well, yeah, if you're going towards Schenectady on the thruway or coming from Schenectady on the thruway, expect some delays.
Jackknife tractor trailer. So.
That's what it looks like.
All right. Well, thank you. It's good to see you here, Mike.
Oh, boy.
Thank you. All right. You know, Alan, just before we went to a break, was talking about, you know, these stomach punches, these attacks. We have to talk about Rudolph Giuliani, right?
Oh, my goodness.
What,
my God.
What the hell happened there? Okay, so former New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani of New York did not back down on Thursday after calling out President Obama as a man who does not love America, telling reporters that his criticism was not racist because the president was raised by a white mother. But wait, there's more.
Yes, there's more.
There is a lot.
I do not believe, and I know this is a horrible thing to say, but I do not believe that the president loves America, Mr. Giuliani said at an event on Wednesday. He doesn't love you. He doesn't love me. He wasn't brought up the way you were brought up, and I was brought up through love of this country. Some people thought it was racist, Mr. Giuliani told the New York Times after the remarks created an uproar. I thought that was a joke since he was brought up by a white mother, a white grandfather, went to white schools, and most of this he learned from white people. This isn't racism. This is socialism or possibly anti-colonialism.
Oh, it's just unspeakable what he said. It's idiotic. It's extremist. It's Oh, I was stunned by it. I actually liked him when he was the mayor of New York. And I just think I can't explain. It was really fun last night watching the talk shows that had a bunch of Republican analysts
clips,
on,
right?
Trying to explain it away. And they were saying, well, he's in an echo chamber and he's hearing this among other people's and he just gave strong voice to it. What?
Well, it's important to remember where he made the original comments, and that was at a fundraiser for Scott Walker. And then he tried to he just made it worse the next day when he was trying to qualify it. And included in the comments he made on many appearances was that, you know, President Obama didn't live through 9/11 the way I did. It was my 9/11.
Oh, my
gosh. And, you know, I think we all lived through 9/11. And, yes, he did an extraordinary job, and he was at Ground Zero, and that was his job. And he's received enormous recognition and praise for that. But, you know, we all went through 9/11. And, and Walker did nothing to,
he just kind of laughed it off,
Yeah, nobody is, standing up to Giuliani from the conservative side of the Republican
Party.
It
was rude and un-American. Somebody on the Republican side should say that.
Alan,
this from a man who brought us Bernie Kerik. You all remember Bernie Kerik. He went to jail,
yeah.
And he was nominated by Giuliani and almost succeeded in getting him to be the head of Homeland Security while he was doing despicable things. I always wonder when I hear Giuliani do something like this. Where Jim Carrey, is that his name from The Mask? Where he is, because he looks like The Mask these days. And I'm talking about Giuliani, of course. And I just feel that this business of showing both sides on the part of the media is so abhorrent. You know, here's a guy, he says anything he wants, and people just can't wait to put it in the newspapers and to create this sensation with it. It is truly disgusting. Now, I know Rosemary will probably have something to say about what I just said.
No, I don't. That's fine.
So what happened? I mean, I guess, Alan, and I'm curious as to the political motivation of this. I mean, obviously, this is a man who does not have his sights set on any position.
Other than Fox anchoring?
Right, yeah, of anchoring Fox and being a commentator on that network. But you do have to wonder, I mean, this is a man who was called in to raise money for the Republican Party. Of what you gain by doing this?
Well, you know, I have a feeling, I've always had the sense that the fickle finger of fame, which attaches to somebody when they really have a shot. And I think there was a period in which really Rudy Giuliani, at least in his own mind, thought he had a shot to be president. Mm-hmm. We see this with George Pataki. He's out there in New Hampshire campaigning around. It's pathetic. But I think what happens is that they have to sometimes reach further and further into this sort of despotic, for want of a better word, rhetoric that allows them to be noticed. And I think that's what it's all about. I think he's enjoying it.
There is a commentary in USA Today, I believe, where they're saying that the Giuliani's remarks and comments are ultimately putting Republican presidential contenders in a bind because they have this desire to criticize the president, but a need to respect the office of the presidency. Oh, by the way, hasn't this been going on for
like 200
years? Right.
Yeah. So didn't have a problem before Barack Obama.
So
is in line with the congressman who yells "you liar" in the middle of a presidential address to Congress. It's just rude, and it turns off. No matter what you think about him, Barack Obama, the presidency deserves more respect than that. It's awful.
And as to the substance of Giuliani's complaint, let's talk about that for a moment.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Look, this is the first black president of the United States. So for Giuliani to say he's disqualified, he's disqualified because he had a white mother, is just so absurd and so patently terrible that it has to be dismissed as being total nonsense. He has a white mother and a white grandfather, and therefore,
and he went to white colleges. That's what he said.
Yeah, he went to white colleges. Right. And then also, by saying
charges of racism.
Right. Yes. That this is the way that he was brought up. To hate America is what he said in that comment. And so how could that be perceived anywhere else other than
I'm sorry,
MSNBC ran a series of clips of Barack Obama talking over the past one and a half terms, and he repeatedly talks about America and about how he is an emblem of what can happen in this country. There's no hatred for America. The evidence is abundantly the other way.
Absolutely.
All right, let's take a break.
Henry has checked in. He says, okay, we'll do that when you get back.
Okay. Well, let's take a break. We'll be back right after this. Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable panel. Very nice to have you with us. And we were just in the midst of getting some letters before we took a break. And we'll get back to the letters and then we'll get back to other topics at large.
That's right. Brendan Coyle says, Mayor Rudy used to be a hero of mine. I really wish he had quietly retired after his unsuccessful presidential bid, because it seems that everything he does these days is only tarnishes his image. And Joan says, when I lived in New York City, I never liked Giuliani. I am not at all surprised at these remarks. He cared nothing about the underdog. With Giuliani, it's all about Giuliani. He should kiss Obama's feet, because he could never be as great a man as Obama is. And then Stephanie said, 9/11 was the event that provided Giuliani with an opportunity to become America's mayor. Prior to that day and to the days that followed, the mayorality of New York City, the majority of New York City residents saw his handling of the teachers and other working groups within the city as bullying tactics. His approval rating and his opinion about the heavy-handed, iron-fisted approach to leadership during his tenure as mayor pre-9/11 got swept under the carpet and became a legend in his own mind. And what we're seeing now is classic Giuliani. And let's see here. This is a little difficult to follow. Joe from Coxsackie says, I said in 2000, that's just a correction on something else. Giuliani said that what most Republicans think has been basking in the reflected bravery of the New York PD and fire department. The only good thing to say about Giuliani now is that he has lost his comb over. Don Steiner says, it is time for Muslim countries to take responsibility for their spreading and funding terrorism. Let countries like Saudi Arabia use their troops to fight terrorism in Iran. No more U.S. troops in the Middle East. And David says, is it possible Giuliani was angling for a VP nomination with Scott Walker as the presidential candidate? That's possible. Anything's possible. And then, let's see here. And then Tom says, Rudy Giuliani in a word. No.
Well, that was one word.
That right. is about it. Do you see something else, Joe?
No. Do you still have that letter in front of you?
The letter in front of me, which one?
The one you just read?
What letter in front of me?
Never mind. Okay, don't worry about it.
9/11. Did I mess up?
No, you didn't mess up. We lost you for a second there. Your mic went out, so I just wanted you to read it again, but that's okay.
All right.
If you don't have it in front of you, that's fine.
Okay, it says Rudy Giuliani in a word, 9/11.
Okay. Great. Okay, we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we go, let's go back to some other stories and find out what is going on. And Mike, we'll let you set this one up because we know a little bit more. Yesterday, the grand jury indicted Sheldon Silver, the former speaker of the New York State Assembly, and we have a little more of an idea of how they are going to proceed in this.
You know, when then Speaker Silver was arrested a few weeks ago, it was based on a federal information. Now comes the formal indictment, which gets the details out of the specific charges he's facing. He used U.S. mail, private and commercial interstate carriers and interstate wires as part of a bribery scheme. I mean, that's how they're going to get him. He used wire communication, quote, for the purpose of executing the scheme to defraud and deprive the public of its intangible right to honest services as an elected legislator and speaker of the assembly. And he willfully and knowfully committed extortion by taking millions of dollars from developers and a doctor with their consent, such consent having been induced under the color of official right. And that's how they're going to get him. That's going to be what they try to prove in a federal trial. He said yesterday when the indictment was announced that he believes he's going to be exonerated. So
you mean, of course, Mike, that's how they're going to try to get him.
Right.
You said that's how they're going to get them.
Well,
This honest services thing is how they tried to get Joe Bruno. And the Supreme Court said it was way too large catchment area. So in other words, you couldn't use honest services the way they were using it against Joe Bruno, and they had to go back. They tightened the whole thing up, and it didn't work. He was not convicted.
Yeah, a lot of people have compared the Silver case to the Bruno case. They're both federal cases in charges involving honest services. But when Joe Bruno was first on trial, there was a much broader interpretation of it, and perhaps it was easier to prove.
Right.
And then they tried the second time and did not succeed, and he was acquitted. But these charges were brought under the new standard. I mean, they wouldn't stand unless they had a lot more on Silver. And of course, they do have the details, that are in the indictment that he collected $3 million from his work at Weitz and Luxembourg. That's the law firm that we knew about where he worked. And then he was collecting other money from another law firm, and that was not reported as required. And while he was, I mean, the interesting thing was while he was being investigated by the Moreland Act Commission, and while there was pressure on him to further disclose where he was making his money outside the office, he was basically saying it was a witch hunt, and suddenly the governor called off the Moreland Act thing. So it is going to be a fascinating prosecution that goes on in the coming year of this whole case.
And you know, Mike, I try to put myself in the place of a juror who's sitting there listening to this case. So they have this doctor, and the doctor...
Yeah, the doctor is going to...
to Shelley and his law firm.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's going to testify
In other words, his patients, yes.
Well,
yes, well, that's right. They have this doctor.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. he's...
But
Hey, Alan, just so you know, we're working on it, but your mic is going in and out, so every once in a while we can't hear you. So if there's lapses sometimes, so that's what's happening, just so you know. But they're working on it.
I'm sorry about
that. No, that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah. So, from, if you can hear me, my sense of this is that if I'm a juror and I am sitting there, right, what am I saying? The doctor was told, okay, Shelley has gotten me a big grant for this terrible disease, and I, in response to that, I'm going to, he said, and by the way, why don't you refer some cases to my law firm? I don't know that the jurors are going to believe that is extortion. I'm going to say about it. Yeah, I just don't know that they have that case.
It's not as ironclad, perhaps, but the other side of the case involving his other law firm, the one that he never disclosed that he was working for and earning an income from, they have a lobbyist who is, according to the federal indictment, evidently prepared to talk about how there was a direct quid pro quo, you know, that he would get support if he would support certain legislation if his law firm, this other unnamed law firm at the time, got business. And that's a quid pro quo. And those are hurtful. I mean, if they can prove that, a jury,
I would say that's a little bit more dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if that's what they have, that's going to be a substantial substantial testimony.
I would say the federal prosecutor has already done his job as far as we're concerned. He has disgraced and removed the speaker and begun what appears to be a serious conversation about reform. That's moving the market pretty much. All the rest of it would be just gravy, I think.
Right. And coming out now, the indictment does put new pressure, you know, or renews the pressure for reform, and there's a lot of talk now about term limits and limiting the power of committee chairmen and all that kind of stuff. And you know, that's a good conversation to be having at the Capitol these days.
I'm here to tell you that these guys Governor Cuomo said yesterday, or the day before, they just don't want to do it, he said, unquote. They just don't want to do it. Well, you know, I've compared this to Pharaoh, who kept saying you can go, and then changing his mind. They don't want to do it. They're making out like bandits, and they don't want to lose that outside income, and they don't want to lose the idea that they could be running for office for the rest of their lives in non-competitive districts, which they drew themselves, and it's disgusting.
Let's move on to other topics. We'll do one more and then we'll take a quick break. But Walmart, the largest private employer in the country, said on Thursday that it would increase wages for 500,000 employees, a move that comes amid persistent scrutiny of its labor practices and high employee turnover. The retail giant, which for years has been the target of widespread criticism over its low pay structure and increasing reliance on part-time workers, said that all of its U.S. workers would earn at least $9 an hour by April and at least $10 an hour by next February. Some labor advocates, however, who are demanding $15 an hour for service workers, called the plan inadequate. Who wants to take this one first?
Well, they were forced into it.
Yes.
You know, other companies like The Gap and I guess Costco have already started to give their employees more pay. And it was pulling employees away from Walmart and over to these other competitors. And they had to respond. It would be nice to think they were doing this out of the benevolence of their hearts. But they did it because the employment rate and the unemployment rate is down. Employment is up and it's getting more competitive. And they are reacting to the market. Unfortunately, that's all that it is, but it's a good reason, you know, that the economy is doing better and these people are going to be turning elsewhere for jobs if they don't get raises at Walmart.
Well, I always maintain that your intention doesn't matter. It's the action. And so while this is good news, it has not changed my personal stance that I do not patronize Walmart. I think that there are policies and are going along with it that we want their cheap products, their low-cost products, has resulted in untold misery to its own workers and around the world. There are sweatshops all over this globe because Walmart is such a huge volume purchaser and demands such low prices. So, no, this isn't enough.
You raise a very interesting point, because Mike's talked about one side of why they're doing it. The other side is, sooner or later, these chickens come home. And people like you, Rosemary, say, I don't want to shop there. Because I don't like what I see. It's still a lot of America gets good bargains there. There's no two ways about it. But on the other hand, or what they consider to be good bargains, and on the other hand, they don't like it when people take advantage. And there comes that magic moment when management says, you know, we really can't get away with this because people don't like us and they're not shopping here. We know it from our various work and our polls and everything else.
Well, there is some speculation that this move will put pressure on the fast food chains to up the amount that they're paying their employees, because they're under a lot of pressure, you know, like McDonald's and Burger King. And you know, it'll help the people. I mean, for whatever reason, you know, the benefit, you know, is being felt by the people at the very bottom of the pay scale, the people who need it most. And I think that's a good thing.
And what do I learn from all of this? Never eat a pretzel while you're on the air.
didn't George Bush have some trouble with pretzels?
Yes. He was watching football when he kind of fell off the couch there.
Little, but he had a lot of people around him to give him the Heimlich.
So deadly food item.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about some other things as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from World Affairs Council of the Mid-Hudson Valley, encouraging informed exploration of world issues, relationships, and connections to the Mid-Hudson Valley region, an all-volunteer organization, hvworldaffairscouncil.org. And Marshall & Sterling, insurance for business, home, auto, bonds, group benefits, and financial planning. For 150 years, our people are your best insurance. Offices in Leeds and Saratoga Springs. MarshallSterling.com/Leeds.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. And we have a couple more letters, Alan, on Rudy Giuliani and the rant. And other things.
Well, maybe I see one from Margaret, who says, with our country torn apart by the right wing, big money, the 1%, Andrew Cuomo has to make corruption public enemy number one. It says here, villages, towns, and cities have corrupt and unfair leaders as well. The town of Windham has seen their supervisor indicted the other day. Well, I don't know about that, so I'm reading it, but at my own trepidation. And then on top of that, I don't see another one on Rudy. Do you, Joe?
We got one from Mark, who said Rudy Giuliani's comments are not only rude, they are socially irresponsible because they incite the worst part of the right-wing Republican base. His comments are divisive and encourage extremist behavior. We also got one from Bobby.
I see him.
Do you
now.
See those now? Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so Deborah about Walmart. I agree with Rosemary, parenthesis, this time. Doesn't matter what pushed them, but Walmart raising pay is a good thing. I understand that $10 an hour is the entry-level wage. Also, Walmart is going to change their scheduling routines so people work at more predictable times. Walmart is important because other companies follow their lead. And then Mark, you just read Mark. And then Joe says, the basic treatment, is that right?
I don't know about that one.
Okay, thank you, Joe. I appreciate that. Yep. Thanks, Joe.
What did Joe say? Yeah.
Well, the point is, I just read them as they come before my eyes.
Yeah.
And Joe is a second pair of eyes, and he quickly jumped in and said, oh, I don't know about that one.
Wasn't quite sure where we were going.
Thank you, Joe.
One. Yep.
Thank you, Joe. Dear Planet. Oh, no, it says not Planet, but Panet. So it's either Panet or Panel. How many people who heard this rant on the news shouted out, what? In outrage. Sounds like playground bully insulting your mother. He questions his upbringing. What he claims is outrageous but also insidious. Once again, the implication is that President Obama is different than the U.S. He does not love his country, wasn't raised in the same patriotic values.
Whoops, cut off.
Unfounded questions about his birth certificates. Any problems?
No.
You could not hear me?
For a second, but we can hear you.
Okay. You know, no, that's good. I can hear you now. So then there's one from John who says, the land of Israel is also part of the Middle East and is one of the most powerful and active of the players in the drama. This is a political problem, not a religious one. They are not innocent bystanders or victims until we hold them to the same standards as we do to the other countries in the region. No one will take our efforts to find peaceful solutions with the problems in the Middle East seriously. Hey, you write them, guys like John, and I read them even if I don't agree. Okay, let's see here. What'd you say?
I said others do agree.
Sure. That's why
yes.
I read them.
All right.
I hear you. And there's some more, but it's up to you, Joe.
You want to go further? You want to do Jeb Bush real quick?
Yes.
All right. Rosemary, all right. This is what we're talking about is a speech. That and I'm going to try to bring up my. We had a little bit of a spill in the studio, a little bit of water.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's okay. Everything's fine. It was only water. we're just drying out. That's all. You didn't get wet, did you, Mike?
Not at all.
Okay, good. All right.
I got wet. Yeah.
Yeah, you got wet. That's
sorry, Alan.
Shorting out the microphone there. So the question is about Jeb Bush, some of the comments that he made on Wednesday in regards to his policies, and there was some question about this, and Rosemary, I'll
he's,
let you
well, well, the big news out of his speech is that he's distancing himself from his family, which is rubbish, and the reporting is rubbish. He's using advisors from the both of the Bush errors.
19 of 21,
errors.
Right?
Yeah.
19 of 21.
And the discussion is a lot like reports on how Hillary is separating herself from Clinton and from Obama, also rubbish. They are part and parcel of the same administrations.
Which just makes sense, that's, right?
Of course it does. It's part of their strength. They've got the organization and the backing and the money. And it is also part of their weakness because if you didn't like those previous administrations, you're not going to like these new candidates. The name is the same.
But what is interesting is that the polls are showing that people are not disliking Hillary because of her association with Bill, as opposed to they're showing real problems for the Bushes the Bushes being too close to each other and not liking the previous Bushes. So that I found that interesting. Didn't you?
I don't think it's significant. I think that people don't remember the Clinton administration anymore. We have the shortest national term of memory of any country on the globe, and she's separated from that. She comes from a period, the Clinton administration was rather happy in our national times. We had prosperity, and George Bush got us into a lot of trouble.
I miss the 90s. You know?
I do, too.
You know, it was fairly peaceful, you know, and there were, there were some...
There was money. There were jobs.
Yeah. It was during the first round of the, you know, the dot-com boom, and things were going really well, and, you know, and everyone was
still
excited.
Had that troublesome healthcare debate, but...
Right. We didn't, I mean, not everything got done, but we basically Bosnia, we got involved in Bosnia, and it kind of worked, you know. The world kind of got got together to stop some genocide and an awful dictator was deposed because of it. So, I mean, you know, things...
And there was Rwanda, but we Americans don't care about Africa.
Right. It was not without problems. But at the homeland, things were relatively good. And I think
And she's a wife. How much did she really agree with him? Like brothers and fathers, they're all in together. Do wives really agree with husbands?
You know,
that's a great point, Rosemary.
Eugene Robinson, the great columnist for the Washington Post, he was saying that, they do have to sit around the same table at Thanksgiving. So he was trying to, be polite to his father and his brother. But the one thing he points out that he's a lot like his brother and he's butchering the English language. He said, for example, immigration should be a catalytic converter for economic growth. I mean, if he's going to start dropping stuff like that, it's going to be such a distraction to his being able to speak on point. And he'll be compared constantly
Which brings up a letter we just got. It's a lie, but I'm going to read it anyway. Alan says, I never met a Republican I liked. Incredibly wrong. I voted for several Republicans. And he never allows something he doesn't like either, like the thing I just read. If a man declares he thinks the president doesn't like his country, Alan calls him despotic. Take the blinders off and listen to the words you say. That's from Ben. Ben didn't tell the truth, but I wanted to read his letter anyway.
All right, we have 3 minutes. Let's end here. Who do you think is going to win the Oscar for Best Picture? Here are the films: American Sniper, Birdman, Boyhood, The Grand Budapest Hotel, The Imitation Game, Selma, The Theory of Everything, and Whiplash.
Theory of Everything.
Selma. Selma wins.
Theory of Everything.
Selma's good history, a good documentary. It's not very good drama.
No.
I don't think it's going to win.
Except that they often vote on social issues. I think that that's what will do it. And, of course, I haven't seen any of those pictures, so I don't care.
Are you suggesting that politics and the like have as much sway than the actual quality of the motion picture?
I'm shocked. Joe, what do you think is going to win?
I believe it'll either be Birdman or Boyhood. Out of those two, I hope it's Boyhood because I didn't really like Birdman.
Oh, I hated Boyhood. It's so boring.
Now, see, that worked for me.
I agree with you.
Ugh, nothing happens. The kid grows up. Yeah.
But it was done over 12 years, and I think that was interesting. I thought the whole – I liked it. It worked for me. But that's – and if I had to vote, if I was a guy who got a vote, which none of us do in this room, unfortunately, but if I could vote, I would vote for Whiplash because that was the most incredible film I've seen.
I haven't seen that one. That's
amazing
one
about J.K. Simmons and a jazz – did you see that, Alan? You'd like that. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, but I can tell you one thing. What?
I can tell you one thing. If, in fact, Selma wins – after my prediction based on nothing, I'm going to gloat like crazy.
Okay. Well, as
you'll be entitled.
You never win. Whenever we make these bets, Alan, we beat you. Oh, I'm out on a limb now, aren't I?
Yeah. And I do have to my bets, if American Sniper won, I wouldn't be sad, and I also wouldn't be completely surprised if that kind of sneaks in. But I still think it'll be one of the two, Birdman or Boyhood. My guess is Boyhood. All right. We'll leave it
there.
Still
boring.
Okay. if you look at the history of the
I mean, I had three boys who actually did grow up in my house, and I never saw the movie in it. So to go...
But if you look at the history of best pictures that have been... they're all pretty boring. thank you all for being with us. We'll be back with more show, and we'll be back with the roundtable panel on Monday. Alan, Rosemary, Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care. You're listening to the roundtable on WAMC.